This is Bill Kopp. I'm an Asheville-based author and music journalist. Among musicians, Tony Levin is as close as one can come to being a household name. Among the wider public, he's not known very well at all. That may be because recordings under his own name have had a relatively low profile, despite Tony Levin's having played on several hundred recordings with and by other artists. He's one of those stellar musicians about which one can say, you may not know his name, but you've heard his playing. His instrumental work, primarily electric bass, upright acoustic bass, and Chapman stick, and his voice have graced recordings by everyone from John Lennon to Yes, from Alice Cooper to Pink Floyd to Buddy Rich. Since 1980, he has been a member of King Crimson, and his work has been a highlight of their tours and recordings. For nearly a decade now, he has also been a member of Stickmen, a progressive instrumental power trio that also features his King Crimson bandmate Pat Mastelotto on drums and touch guitarist Chapman stick player Marcus Reuter. Stickmen will be in Asheville at the Grey Eagle on Saturday, April 23rd. I have seen Tony on stage live many times, and I've interviewed him on several occasions. Our latest conversation took place just days before the Asheville show. Here's that chat. Conventional bands divide duties between guitar and bass, between lead and rhythm. How would you contrast the approach that Stickmen employs?
Wow, well, it's completely different because each of us, Marcus Reuter playing his touch guitar and myself playing my Chapman stick, each of us have bass strings and guitar strings and a stereo output, so we can either of us be the bass function or both at the same time, which we do, or neither of us at the same time. So we vary it a lot because our music is quite progressive in the real sense of it, and we're musically open to different ways to approach pieces. So when we write them, we'll trade back and forth, for instance, the bass area, and at times neither of us does it, and there are sometimes it finds us both playing it. So it's really great to be in a band that gives us that musical latitude, but also we pretty much feature these instruments, these two instruments that both can be both a bass and a guitar.
You and Pat Mastelotto have years of experience now working together within and outside the context of King Crimson. How does your work together in Crimson color or influence what you do in Stickmen?
Well, very good question. Well, Pat and I are very close friends. And yes, since 1994, we've been making a ton of music together, mostly live and in front of audiences, but a number of albums too. And you're right, not just in King Crimson and Stickmen context, we've done other albums. And I've had Pat play on my own albums. In fact, Pat played on my solo album called Stick Man, which was the genesis of, I shouldn't use the word genesis in progressive rock interview, but it was the beginning of what became the band Stick Man, mm-hmm. because it came out really well. And I overdubbed multiple stick parts on that album, Stick Man. And then it came out so well that I kind of wanted to do it live. And I realized I got a problem here. I can't just get a guitar player and ask him to play these stick parts. So I searched around for another stick or touch guitar player, and it ended up Marcus fulfilling that. So really, Pat was in it from the beginning, before Stick Man, before it was Stick Man. And musically, he's very adventurous. He's very musical, and he hears the piece and he interprets in his musical sense how to react to it. And I appreciate that, and I learned from that. And I'm always surprised even recently when we were co-writing new material for Stickmen, because we want to have a new album out for this tour we're on now. Recently, when I sent him stuff, I had an imagined part that Pat would play, not a standard one, but, I've heard Pat react this way, and just this is probably what he'll do. Not that I care, but I can't help but get that idea when I'm writing what I call a seed part for the beginning of a piece. And he constantly surprised me and do something different. And that's a wonderful thing about him, and I try to appreciate how lucky I am to be playing with guys of that caliber, but also to let it rub off on myself and try to be as open-minded and creative and constructive about new ideas as Pat is.
I've always thought of Pat as one of the most musical drummers that I've heard.
Sure. Yeah. Agreed.
If you were to put a percentage on it, how much would you, of what we'll see on stage with Stickmen is improvisation, and how much is, shall we say, structured?
Good question. Very good. And usually I'm not good at the hypotheticals, but because we've done a number of shows and we've fashioned three different set lists, one of which we will do each night, I have a good sense we're doing somewhat less improvisation than we usually than we did the last couple tours, but we still do a lot. So I would say there are two or three pieces which have open-ended middle sections where we play anything. So we can stretch out as much as we want. The two or three of those, and some nights we also start the show, instead of all coming on, we start with Marcus Reuter coming out and doing 5 minutes of total improvisation. Hmm. So if were I to add up the minutes, I would say 15 minutes of the show will be that.
Oh, okay. What can you tell me about the new Tentacles EP?
Well, like I said, we put it together in the last few months. It began in December, and we made a concerted effort to... Marcus, by the way, lives in Berlin. Pat lives in Texas, and I live in New York State, in Kingston, New York. So we had to record remotely, and write remotely, which we've done before, but we made a concerted effort to try to do that in a better way, to really succeed in co-writing things where each player has an opportunity to contribute to it, as opposed to a very valid and normal way where Marcus will write a composition and he'll say, Tony, I would suggest you play this part on your stick, but you can change it. You can be yourself and do what you want, or I do the same and I write a piece and present it to them. So this time we traded seed ideas that had a lot of open end. And for instance, if I found a groove I liked, or a few, I put them together to a piece, but with sections in between where even the time signature was up for grabs. And that involved a lot of trading of the material back and forth. The other guys couldn't just play a finished part to that because, of course, as you can tell from what I said, they don't know what the letter B, what time signature it's going to be in or what D. So a lot of trading back and forth, and we feel very good, very gratified that it worked out well. Everybody who's heard this material thinks the new material is very good, and we do too. And I think the EP has 5 pieces, and we're doing 4 of them live. The adventure of trying to work them up to play them live, having just composed them in a recording method, that was quite a challenge, and we're fine with it now. The first few shows were a little nerve-wracking because who's going to play that third stick part, for instance, and how are we going to do that? And we didn't have enough rehearsal time to really master that. So it took a few tries on the road, and we're very comfortable with the show now, having done 7 or 8 shows. And we're looking forward to coming to Asheville. It's been a long time since we've been there, and it's going to be great. We're very excited about the tour and about coming there.
You talked about the compositional approach sort of seed material. Across the history of Stickmen, not necessarily with specific reference to the new EP, do new compositions ever grow out of your onstage improvisations? I mean, is there something that happens on stage where one of you says, oh, let me make a note of that because that can be,
sure,
maybe we can build that?
I can't remember an instance where that happened. I can remember it happening with a different band. Maybe, what band was it? Bruford Levin Upper Extremities. I was touring with them and we did an improv so cool one night that I online asked if anybody had a tape recording of it because we didn't, a recording of it because we hadn't recorded it, and somebody kindly sent me their bootleg that they had made at the live concert, and we learned it, and we played that. But that's very unusual. What we have we have many ways that we've done writing through the years. One is we get together in the same place at the same time, and we improvise for days, and then we cull the best of it. We take the best of that and either fix it or leave it and make that an album, especially the album called Open was entirely that, but mm-hmm. We have quite a few albums where that was part of it. Another way is where a composition will have a section in it, as I mentioned before in the live show, where, okay, here it goes into free and we'll do what we want. And we record it either together or apart, but it's very improvised, the middle section. And the third way we compose is to completely write the whole piece, which happens sometimes.
I'm always interested in this with regard to composers of instrumental material. Would you say that the individual pieces that you compose are, quote unquote, about something? Or asking that a different way, do you have non-musical ideas in your head with regard to the songs?
The answer is, all your questions are wonderful, and they move me to do some thinking in a direction I haven't done before. So it varies a lot. There are occasions when I have a specific idea, non-musical idea about what I'm writing the music about, and I might title it to imply that, or I might not. But more often, it's just a musical idea. It's something that came up on the instrument, and then I go casting about for a title. And the third category is where I've written the music, at least mentally, or I started to record it, and I think of a subject that seems to be the way it's sounding, and then that influences the music, the finishing of the music. So we've had all three of those unusual situations. There's one very specific, what I would call a tone poem that I wrote a long time ago called Whale Watch. It was specifically about the experience of going out on a boat to watch to find a whale, and had movements and things like that. So I intentionally wrote that, as classical musicians do sometimes. It's a tone poem with titles of each segment of the piece. But that's I think that's the only piece we've done that specifically has a visual or a cinematic situation for each musical section.
With regard to that third category, with that kind of composition, how important, if at all, is it that the listeners are aware of those ideas? Or is it enough that it means that thing to you?
Yeah, I think each songwriter has a different, or each composer would have a different answer to that. To me, it's fine if they, not to give them an idea. I think people's musical imagination spawns visuals if they lean in that direction, and that's fine. That's in a way better than anything I could direct them at, and I wouldn't want to impose a restriction on that freedom of the listener to imagine what he will. But sometimes it seems like fun to set them off in a direction. I'm going to pick one piece that's called, on the new EP, that's called Ringtone. Mm-hmm. I think when I first wrote the very first riff of it, it sounded a little like a ringtone, so I temporarily titled it the way we do. We change titles many times before a piece comes out, and somehow in passing it back and forth, it became called Ringtony. Not by me, I didn't name it that, but one of the other guys did. And then it seemed, the image of a light snowfall in Atlanta kind of imposed itself on the music, and as it was finishing up, I changed the title to Atlanta Snowfall, and it was that way right until the day before we sent in the artwork for the package to be put together, and I said, oh, that's a little too specific. I don't feel good about having the listener begin to listen to it and hear that first riff thinking about, oh yeah, the snow is starting to fall, and then this is going to happen, and this, and so we changed the name back to Ringtone. So that kind of adventure in the realm of what you're talking about a title in a mood aside from the music, we have all kinds of approaches, and we never settled on a single way to do it.
For a long time now, and certainly in recent years, you're involved in many, many musical projects. What creative fulfillment do you get out of Stickmen that sets it apart from the other musical pursuits that you have?
Wow. Well, each is, as you implied, each is unique, and each is very gratifying. I'm very lucky to be in a number of situations that really work musically, and that's what I'm about. That's what I live for, so I appreciate always how lucky I am to do that. So what Stickmen does, a number of things. We tour a lot. We play in front of people a lot, and that's the thing I most love to do. I like recording, but I love playing live, and I love giving the compositions a chance, whether it's my compositions or someone else's, giving them a chance to grow and to really be what the most that they can be, which hopefully is different than the first recording. So Stickmen is quite adept at that. Because we tour a lot, because our pieces are not what I would call open-ended, but they have latitude to grow and to just be what they are as we play them more and more. In fact, we're just discussing on yesterday's drive up to Quebec, we were discussing whether to use this EP as part of a subsequent full release CD with maybe 11, 12, 13 songs. And if so, whether we should re-record them now that we played them live, because they've changed a great deal. And we haven't decided that for sure, but probably if that happens, we will take advantage of the way the song has gone in a direction of its own that was different than what we conceived in the beginning. So I appreciate that, and Stickman is the best outlet I have for that. King Crimson's wonderful, Peter Gabriel's glorious and wonderful, and I love touring with both of those. But the way Stickman lets the compositions kind of expand as we tour, which is a thing you can do with a smaller band. It's three people. With the seven guys in King Crimson, there's some latitude, but less than you have with three people. So it's a great outlet in that sense.
What's next for Stickman after this run of dates, or have you thought that far in advance yet?
We have not only thought, but you have to book things in advance. So live performance needs to be booked quite a bit in advance, and which has been, needless to say, extremely tricky in the years of COVID, because you book it and it gets canceled or it gets postponed, and you have to hold dates, and the club goes out of business and things like that. So we have plenty planned. We will tour Japan in July. We're touring the U.S. right now for the entire month of April, and we'll tour Japan in July, and then in November we will tour South America extensively. I don't think those dates have actually been booked, but we know we're going, and unless something terrible happens, that's what we'll do. Frankly, the agent has plans for the agent Leonardo, whom you know, has plans for next year too, but I haven't been paying attention a lot because I'm very busy with the current plans, and also I'm in another band, Levin Brothers, which is also getting booked for the upcoming few months, and so I just don't have the need to look at the tentative plans for next year.
Sure. Do you think your project with your brother, with Pete, will come to Asheville possibly?
You never know. I never know until it's booked. I know that our June tour leg is only in the Northeast. If it's a short tour, we need the kind where we can go home and save on hotel rooms in between a few of the shows. So I know that we won't be there in June. And the September tour, I think, is just being booked now, and I have no idea what territory it's in. It's perhaps people would think that musicians would know that, or that we're even telling people where to book us, but I leave the booking to people who know what they're doing, and then they tell us where we're going, and then we go there.
Fair enough. Well, thanks for talking with me, and best of luck on the dates to follow, and we look forward to seeing you here in Asheville.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. I always enjoy talking to you, and I appreciate the intelligence of your questions, which, as I mentioned, send my brain off in directions it hasn't been, and that's a good thing for me. I like that. And as I said before, very excited to come back to Asheville. It's been too long, and it'll be great to be there.
Thanks to Tony Levin, as well as tour manager and head of Moon June Records, Leonardo Pavkovic, for scheduling the interview you've just heard. Once again, I'm Bill Kopp, Asheville-based author and music journalist. You can find more than 1,000 of my artist interviews online in written form by visiting musoscribe.com. Stickman will be at Asheville's Grey Eagle on Saturday, April 23rd. See you at the show. Back to you, JD.